$7.5 million for each of the 234 votes. That's the way it was bought. And the move in Washington local, that's just the way we do business up here. Well, if that is, that's not a proper way to do business. Things should be decided on their merits. The Republicans, who were strongly for it, did a poll right after the vote and found that 60% of the registered Republicans were against it. I was fascinated, since they were in Brio, of course they didn't really work. But it's done. The sad thing is that, and we're seeing it now, so the Mexican people, the revolt that you see down there, the Mexican people are saying what we were saying for months, that the Mexican worker is not treated fairly. The Mexican worker is a good worker. He is 90% as productive as the American worker. If he makes 1/7 as much as a United States worker building cars, you can't compete with that. Now, everything we do, Brian, is linked together. We treat it in Washington as like each thing is on a separate island and there's no interconnection. It's all linked together. Let's assume your competitor goes to Mexico to take advantage of the cheap labor and not have any pollution, environmental regulations, dump it in the Rio Grande, pop it in the air, dig holes in the ground and drop waste, chemical waste down into the underground water supply, and have a disproportionate number of workers around this chemical plant, babies born without brains. You've got a chemical plant in the United States, you can't compete with that. You're going to Mexico, you're going out of business. Then, let's assume you're a red, white, and blue guy, you're hanging up there barely making money, healthcare passes. Your competitors are going to Mexico to get rid away from them. You will have to go to Mexico. But there's a gap there since it all interrelates. The reason everybody wants to sell into the United States is that we're the biggest market for goods and services in the world. You say, don't worry, Japanese, everybody will keep building automobile plants here. No, they can build automobile plants in Mexico. Just watch the activity in Mexico. Because it's a huge economic advantage, and ship it across the border duty free. We're the biggest buyers of goods and services in the world today. The reason we are is that our people have good jobs and can afford to buy things. People who don't make anything can't buy anything. If we lower the standard of living of our people, not only do we reduce our ability to balance the budget to pay the debt, but we reduce our ability to purchase. And we no longer have the ace of being the biggest market in the world. See, everybody should want build factories here since this is the place they sell things. It is so tough to do business here, nobody wants to build a factory here. In a perfect world, with everything interrelated, there would be a rush of capital from around the world and a rush of building facilities from around the world in the U.S. for the real market. But no, it's too expensive to do anything here. So you try to sit offshore, dump goods in here, use the cheapest labor you can find, but the blind spot is if the people don't have jobs, they won't be the biggest market in the world. All this takes time. The bad news is for election cycles in very short periods of time. So as the Japanese say, we think 10 minutes ahead, they think 10 years ahead.
See, in trade, if the president were to lift the embargo, trade embargo against Vietnam, what would your reaction be?
We left men behind at the end of the war. We know we left men behind. Anybody that questions that, and C-SPAN hasn't done it, get Senator Smith and his staff sometime to give the briefing using the recently released intelligence documents. These are government documents that have been classified for years. The evidence is just overwhelming. I've known this for years, I've said it for years, many others have. And now you can take their documents and prove your case. It is morally wrong to send men into combat and leave them behind at the end of the war. And then in Vietnam, you can get the declassified documents, and you've got the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the Secretary of the Navy, the Secretary of Defense, talking about the fact we've got to start bombing again in order to get the rest of our POWs out. That's at the end of March, 1973. April 13, 1973, 2 weeks later, they declared no more living Americans in Southeast Asia. Facts are, see, there was no will to start bombing again. There was no, here was the real problem. And here is the real problem today, with the end of that behind. We promised the Vietnamese reparations money. They released a group of prisoners and held the rest until they got the money, which was just shrewd on their part, frankly. War is ugly, war is dirty. Nothing pretty about war. But war does have rules and politics, doesn't it? So I make that comment. There are rules in war, there are rules in politics. There was no wrestling in the rules of politics. They kept part of people. Then Congress was angry, wouldn't pay the reparations money. Watergate was in full flight. American people were in disarray, and they just shut it down. And whereas Dr. Kissinger, he had no leverage, and he's right. He had no leverage at that time to continue negotiating. How would you like to be over there for 28 years? It's now 1994. 21 years. Left behind by the greatest country in the history of man. And in the race to make a little money in a country of Vietnam, let's go ahead and recognize them and just write these men off. We left men behind in Cold War. Let's look at our history. We left men behind in Russia in World War II. We left men behind in Korea. We left men behind in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. Russia and the Soviet messages are right there for the world to see. Took people out of Vietnam to Russia. Now, that's war. They wanted to find out all of the intelligence information they could on our electronics, our airplanes, and what they did. Those people never came back. What happened to them? All should be accounted for. This should be a moral problem for our country. Instead, it's been swept under the rug, and the general coverage is given to all of this intelligence data that's now public record. And there is the rush to recognize. The rush should be, now we go look for remains in Vietnam, but there's no real effort at all to search for live Americans. No ifs, ands, and buts. They had a second-tier prison system. You can see that in all the intelligence documents. You can see it from the Russian documents, and so on and so forth. And all of the data at the end of the war and since the war, talking about the number of men we left behind, is several hundred. The question is, how many are still alive? And the moral obligation is to bring them home.
Do you think there are still Americans alive?
Yes. Yes.
Do you think they're living in Vietnam?
They're probably, well, some of this, again, as you said, when I say it, they'll move them. So I'd rather not discuss it. But we have a good idea where they are.
And again, going back to if the president lifts the embargo.
The primary concern is that, using the old statement, dead men tell on tables, you never have to be embarrassed or explain about living POWs if you kill them. And what a tragedy after all these years. These men deserve to come home and spend whatever years they have remaining in their lives in this country that they literally have given years of their lives to think. I'm sure the average guy said he'd rather have his name on the Vietnam wall killed in combat during the war than have to endure 20-some-odd years of hell, for example. Being used as slave labor. These are pilots. Not that it matters. These are majors, lieutenant colonels, colonels. Stories of them being used as human beings pulling plows. At one time there was a videotape that who's the intelligence community thought was valid, that one former Special Forces guy had seen that showed POWs in Golden Triangle being used as slave laborers, using them using the cut cameras, just using them for the toughest, hardest kind of work. Stories of people who escaped came in places like the Swedish paper mill. The workers wanted to protect them. The manager contacted the embassy and then turned back to the Vietnamese, and on and on and on and on and on.
Yes, you some more about United Standing
there. Sure.
Do you ever intend to publish the number of people of the line?
I don't know. We'll talk about that when we all get together. Everybody gets so excited about it. It's kind of Christmas. Anticipation is better than that.
Somewhere I saw that they're over a million. Can you tell us that?
We don't say it. It's a very significant number of people, and we're very fortunate to have so many wonderful people in the organization. We have not published the number, and I don't give incremental numbers, because the next person says it's over two. Next person says it's over three. So we don't say it.
Since you've gotten into this politics business for the last 2 years, do you have any idea how much total money you've spent?
Well, most of it was during campaign. And that's a matter of record, and I think it's 60-something. I promised the American people if they put me on the ballot, I'll put the states, we'd run a world-class campaign. We'd not spend a penny of government money, we didn't. And I had somewhere in $60 million. I don't have it exactly in my head, but it was a lot of money.
Would you ever do it again?
Well, I didn't. Nobody, I think, would want to do it. They're really nice parts of it, and those are with the American people. That is pure joy and pleasure. There's a lot of it that is just life. Most of life is just sort of, you know, cleaning up the kitchen, taking out the trash, and doing what you have to do. But the best part is the American people, because the American people are really wonderful, good, decent people who love this country, who do want to continue to build and strengthen this country, who do understand that every time you pass another law in Washington telling us whether to brush our teeth or what have you, you're taking away a part of our freedom. The average person on the street understands that at the core of a free society is the willingness of each individual to take full responsibility for his or her own actions. The American people understand that a free society can't endure without a strong moral, ethical base. Now, all these parts, that's the fun part. In terms of public life versus business life, no comparison. Business life is pure pleasure, as far as I'm concerned, because you're working and building and creating jobs, and you're doing productive, constructive things. The other, and I think this is just an American tradition, is, you know, it's 1,000 straight bullets a day unrelated to what the core issues are. But that's the way the game is played. If I could wave a wand, I'd say, let's not make it a game anymore. Let's make it a serious undertaking. And let's agree that you and I can disagree without my feeling the need to try to destroy everything about you, including your cat, if I can. So let's just disagree. In other words, if you say we should go do one thing, we should debate that issue. I should respect your views. You may disagree with me, but you say in free society I have a right to my views. That's not the way the system works now. You get a consensus, as you know, and then you get the establishment, and then you get the beltway crowd, and then once they decide to rule, then anything that's in the way is just consider something that needs to be moved out of the way.
But let me ask you again, do you think you'd ever run it?
For example, I never wanted to run for public office. People have been trying to get me to run for office since 1968, when somebody ran a poll and said I could be governor of Texas. I had so many people writing and calling me wanting me to run for president. I finally said, well, you want to put me on the ballot, all 50 states, I'll do it. I did. I would say the only reason I would ever run again is that if the members who worked so hard and so effectively just really, really, really felt that, see, my dream is Democrats and Republicans will have two candidates so good that the average citizen feels heads we win, tails we win in 1996. Now, I am not driven to be an elected official. I'm more than happy to be a servant in my country. Now, what role? Maybe the role we're in now, where we just stay focused on the issues.
Let me approach it a different way. Some people surmise that you've been so soured by the process of the media and all the exposure and everything that you've had enough of it. Would you say that you haven't had enough of it?
See, these events that they create and promulgate, that has not come from me.
So you're not tired of all this?
But see, the point is, I can understand why you raise the question, because when you read it long enough and other people's opinions, but I don't think you ever heard me say that. I said, I'm just being completely candid with you in terms of, and I think this is an interesting thing for the American people to think about, and I don't mean that I fall in this category, but let's assume that we do want the best and most talented people in our country in public life. We don't want them as a career, we want them to come serve and go back home. Then we need to have an environment that would attract the best and talented people to give up whatever they're doing. Now, maybe it's a doctor, maybe it's a lawyer, maybe it's an Indian chief, whoever, a nurse, or whatever. They leave, they go serve, they come back home. I think we have a much better, stronger country rather than having everybody so thirsty for power. That's the wrong reason to go. So thirsty for power that they will endure anything in order to have power. That is probably the least healthy thing that could happen in a free society. Something for the American people to think about. It's something that the American people do think about.
Back in understanding America, your next get-together is with what this
all the elected state officials will get together, get our agenda set for 94, and go to it.
Where are you going to meet?
when we were in February.
And here in Dallas?
Yeah, in Dallas. Yeah.
And how long are you meeting people?
Oh, like several days. Four days.
You've had two books published in the last couple of years. One on your budget proposal and one on NAFTA. How did they do it?
Three. We've had three now. The first was, and so they've all been on the bestseller list. The first one was number one on the bestseller list, to my amazement, completing after the election for a while, and on the bestseller list, I tried, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, how many books there?
Not so many, but large numbers. And the other two got to the second on the bestseller list, so they've all been good distribution. And there is a great thirst on the part of the American people for clear and detailed explanations of the issues. You won't believe how many people read the big NAFTA volumes and how few congressmen did. That's the whole meaning of the outlook. I'm talking about the two published volumes by the U.S. government on NAFTA. And then at the last minute, this giant that became a law that nobody in Congress had time to read because it was given to them at the last minute. Now, only in America would you have buried in their tax breaks for Honda Motor Company, which has nothing to do with NAFTA. That's what's wrong with the system. I was watching television the other night, and they were showing again all of the lobbyists taking the congressmen and their staffers out for vacations. That's wrong. We wouldn't allow suppliers to do that in the company.
That was the prime time live.
I forget that.
It's on ABC.
No, yeah, late last night. Yes, that's right.
Why is it wrong? Why shouldn't members of Congress and the Senate be allowed to go to places for charity like they were?
Almost nothing to do with charity. If you look around, all the doors to charity, it's insignificant. It's tiny compared to the amount of money it costs the government and entertainment. Right. This goes back to public service should not take anything from special interests. For example, there's a strong feeling in our organization that the members of Congress should only take contributions from people in their district. The members of the U.S. Senate should only take contributions from people in their state. And it is dead wrong for a congressman to try to get on one of these power committees like banking, so that every bank in the country dumps huge contributions into his war chest, and nobody in his district can raise a fraction of that much money. And television time is the key to winning. So nobody has a chance, and he becomes the longest-serving congressman in history because he got on the power committee. That's not right.
Back to the books that were done. Do you plan another book?
We're talking about it. We'll probably do something on health care this year, and we'll do issues over in the books.
How soon would you have to have a health care book out in order to make a difference in this debate?
Well, who knows? It may drag on. It may move quickly. It all depends on how things come together. There's every indication that it will be a lengthy debate. There's some indication that the Senate one hand wants welfare reform put in front of it, so there'll be the usual moving, this kind of thing that goes on in free society with every priority. And you never know.
Will you mount an effort in health care like you did in NAFTA?
If the members want to, we'll discuss that while in Dallas.
What are your instincts?
I feel very strongly about it.
What aspect of it? Is there aid for welfare reform? I mean, for health care reform?
Yes. Yes. But, in the language of the street, keep in mind, I spent an awful amount of, a lot of time on the street last year with real people. And here is what this folks have to roll around. It's awesome. The government's going to take over health care under the Clinton plans. Yeah. They're going to tell a doctor how much to make, what he can and can't do, so on and so forth. They'll figure all this out. And so let me ask you this. They don't tell doctors how much they make. Why don't they tell lawyers how much they can make? And why don't they tell athletes how much they can make? And why don't they tell anchormen how much they can make? Why don't they single out doctors? Once you cross that threshold of a free society, then do you go on and put everybody on a maximum salary? So I don't know that's... But it's interesting that ordinary people think that way. Second thing. So if these fellows are so good at healthcare, they've been to say, can the government run the healthcare system? And the man on the street says, what are the worst hospitals in the United States? The ones the government runs, the government's hospitals. If they think they can run healthcare, why don't they prove it to the American people by making the government hospitals role models of excellence? This is step one. I think that's an interesting point. wasn't there tonight. Then they saw the organization chart, the health care system plan, which came in Wall Street Journal. And as one fellow said, this is, I think he's an electrician, he said, Ross, it looked like Rube Goldberg threw that thing while he was having a nightmare. If you understand organizations and you look at that chart, you realize that makes the Pentagon look like a ballet dancer. That thing is designed to fail. That organization chart. So their point is, if you're going to try to solve a problem, why turn it over to an institution that has a history of doing a terrible job in health care? Medicare and Medicaid are totally out of control. If you look at the original forecast of what Medicare and Medicaid would cost at this time, so Medicaid was not supposed to exceed $1 billion a year, and I think it's now, the last figures I saw, $76 billion, so that's a little bit of a miss in the forecast, right?
Yeah.
Medicare, a huge miss in the forecast. Let's take a logical and process here. Let the government prove that it can do a good job in health care. Number one, clean up the VA hospitals. Number two, make all of these savings that they're promising on Medicare and Medicaid, which they're running now. Put the money in the bank. I can't wait to see that happen. Make those savings, because this whole health care system is predicated on those savings. So then, having proven their ability to do this job well, let's start experimenting on a pilot basis with some of their ideas. The average person here in Texas County, Texas, understands that what works in a small town in health care probably won't be the system that works in New York City and our major metropolitan areas. You totally lose grassroots America on this health care plan when they realize that the mother cannot pick the doctor that will deliver her baby. They look at you like you're from Mars when they see that aspect of it. They leave you totally on the thought that if they had a serious illness, a life-threatening illness, member of their family, they couldn't go find the finest doctor to try to save that member of their family. So we have a system that needs dramatic improvement, but just turning it over to the federal government with its history of mediocrity and failure in managing social programs and its total lack of discipline on spending when it comes to social programs. And finally, here's my favorite, we're going to do this off budget. So we can pretend it doesn't from not having stacked up in the national debt, even though it is a part of the national debt. So this is an airplane with no wings. On a free candy argument, something for nothing, that's the way this will be sold. We're going to take care of it. And step one in free society, when we start telling you that, you better be alert. Because the fundamental of free society is everyone who can must take care of himself or herself. The good chance we will seriously damage the whole medical profession. If we're not careful here. We have wonderful medical care in this country. Expenses are out of control. There's a basic reason for it. When I grew up here in Texas County, the patient was the customer. Now the insurance company is the customer. For example, I got a big medical bill through my office yesterday for one of my employees. And everybody in my businesses has always had the same medical care I had. And I asked the major question. I said, now, has this person signed off on this bill? And the person said, no, but the insurance company did. I said, that's not the point. I want the employee who knows what they did and didn't do to go line item through the bill like you would if you were paying for it out of your pocket, right? This goes back to individual responsibility. So have the employee check it. It didn't sign that bill. Make sure that the person who was treated always goes through it. We've taken the patient, is no longer the customer, now it's the insurance company. If our new plan goes through, that's been proposed, the government will become the customer, and health care will be rationed, and you and I will stand in line, which is not pretty if you need a heart operation, or if you have some life-threatening problem. People pour out of town to the United States because they can't wait. There's a tragic story of a little boy who had to have a heart operation. He couldn't get it in town, he was on the waiting list. Then, the story was run, a U.S. doctor in the hospital heard about it and said, send him down here to a station. That story was run in Canada. The Canadian government was so embarrassed they put him at the head of the list. but they delay it until after you got an operator. You don't want to take what we have now and go to that. Here in Texas, I can take you to Dallas, Texas, Parkland Hospital. You can see the poorest person in Dallas come in with a life-threatening problem and see the genius doctors and the Nobel Prize winners in medical school operating on that person. Now, they'll have the people in there that's, you know, it's doing a teaching function, but the quality of the person with the scalpel in his hand or their hand is unbelievable. That before we change all this with a radical plan put together by people whose lives have not been spent in health care, we better really be careful.
We talked earlier about the issues on the United Stand America's list. You had campaign reform, you had line and veto, balanced budget amendment, health care.
Term limits. We like term limits tied to, so we feel strongly that the economic plan should have had an overall plan to balance budget over time. And we had proposed that we put term limits as part of that. If they didn't stay on their schedule, term limits, which have been already acted under law, would kick in. So there is a reason to stay on schedule. Right now, there's no reason to stay on schedule. There is any reason in the world to hand out candy. To agree to build two airplanes the Pentagon doesn't want to cost almost $2 billion in one congressional district to get one vote for that. What in the world does that have to do with this one in Senate? Let's assume that you're determined to do that as your president. My advice would be just find out what your salary cost to the people in that district would be, which is a fraction of the cost of the airplane. Agree to pay that. Don't create the airplane, don't buy the aluminum, don't buy the hull, don't buy the aluminum, just pay them. And you spend a fraction of what you would have spent, plus you don't have airplanes to maintain. The cost of maintaining airplanes is very expensive. But that's not the way the system works.
Going in 1994, how much of your time you have spent on politics versus your business?
All of it.
All politics.
All my time gets spent on out-of-color politics, back at working with United States Americans.
Are you going to make the rounds of the television shows again? Let me just ask you differently. Are they as interested in you today as they used to be?
At this point, I think the general mood is no access to television. I cannot back television at this point.
Why not?
I don't know. I think it's just the same thing. This is not inside the system. This is not part of the, this is not part of the lobbying network. This is, we've got this thing working the way it has been working now. And we want to keep things the way they are. We don't want change, and these are components of change. So, the real bullhorn voice is the ability to talk to the American people. If we accept that as just a temporary issue, but the facts are, it is their right if they want to sell time to sell it. It is their right if they don't want to sell time to sell it. Now, you could say that the error is wrong with people. You could make a big argument. But we will get the message out. Just think of how many people got messages out before television came on. We will get the message out, and we are getting the message out. That will change over time.
When was the last time they sold you time?
That was last spring.
And did they give you a reason when you tried to buy time from Ashton?
Oh, we tried to buy time for Ashton. We're not able to buy time at this point.
Would you ever think of using a legal recourse?
I don't think that's productive, and we haven't even talked about it.
What about access to the different programs? The Today Show and Good Morning America. Are they interested in hearing from you these days?
No. I can't speak for them, but I haven't heard anything from them lately. They're probably been busy on other issues, and they may or may not be interested in the future. And again, that's their right, as far as I'm concerned.
If they're not interested, do you have any idea of why they would be interested?
I'd say you have to say
that. On the issue of crime, your group plan anything?
Yes. Now, we'll be talking about that in our 4-day meeting. We'll be talking about, there's some things you can't pass a law to correct. And the American people really need to spend a lot of time thinking about this.
we cannot pass the law that says, the United States of America must have a strong law and ethical base. Each person must be very caring and sensitive about every other person. And under no circumstances would a good, decent American go out and shoot somebody in a drive-by shooting. This goes back to who we are, what we believe, what we stand for. This goes back to the deterioration of family unit. There's a direct correlation in terms of violence and the strength of the family unit in different segments of our cities. These are problems we have to work on outside the law, and that we really need to discuss and talk about them. And a lot of people are starting to do it, and a number of the leaders in various groups are starting to talk about it. I think that's helping. We need to very clearly, though, pass laws where if one person inflicts violence on another person. See, the Brady Bill will not solve the problem. It's a step, and I don't condemn it or anything, but it doesn't fix the problem. It's produced a rash of gun purchases. Yeah, I don't know if you read that or not, but there's a huge number of people on the guns, you know, always get on the way to get money. It's what you do with that gun that really matters. We live in such a violent society that if we, particularly in the poor sections of our cities where people have bars on the windows and bars on the door, the law-abiding people, because their neighborhoods have been abandoned in crime, and that includes Washington, D.C. That my advice to Washington, take every good idea you have on crime and make Washington, D.C. your testimony, because that is a city in trouble. And you live there, Congressman. Let's make Washington a role model for the country and the world. But just appropriating huge sums of money to go out, not going to do it. We'll have to make it unthinkable to inflict violence on another human being, not just with a gun. See, I don't care whether you kill the guy. If you kill the guy with a gun, a knife, or a pipe, if he's there, he's dead. The price for that will be you go away and you don't ever come out of this mouth. And you don't go to some place that costs more to keep you out of the other than hiring to educate you. But you are just put out of society and not turning back. So no matter how drunk you are, or how high you are, or how crazy you are, that will clear your head. Not to pull the trigger. And you're certainly not, in order to earn a membership in a teenage gang, going to gratify and kill an innocent human being. As a trophy. For example, when I was growing up in Dexter County, I never heard of anybody driving along the roads at night shooting cattle or horses or animals in pasture to food something. And it was considered terrible to kill an animal when you were hungry unless you were going to eat that animal. You just didn't kill for sport, even animals. Now we kill human beings for sport. The only way to get a screeching halt to that, while we take the time to build a strong moral ethical base, then that will take time. And what our children see in television and in the movies does nothing to build a strong moral ethical base. It does everything to deteriorate. Because violence becomes thinkable. If you watch all of this creative violence, night after night after night after night, then it becomes thinkable.
So the government get involved in the
hearings on this level. Yes, I would like for the people who run the entertainment industry to say, you know, we really can have an enormous impact on this country. We can be a terrific force for good. The finest times in the world have difficulty offsetting this hour after hour barrage of violence.
But you can get involved.
As a last resort.
In what way?
I think we just have the people on the airwaves. And the government has a responsibility not to saturate the country with a type of programming that degrades the moral and ethical standards of the American people. Because a free society must have a strong moral and ethical base. Now, when you get into this, you know, then everybody wants to say, but wait a minute, this is what we're talking about, Catholic, Protestant, Jewish. I say, take the common values in all those religions. I have no religion that doesn't teach some variation of the golden rule. I have no religion that doesn't teach people to care for one another and to try to do the right thing. So it has nothing to do with secular religion. It has anything to do with this is square one on making a free society work. We've got to stop claiming to all be tricky and cute. Everybody wants to run down the sidelines of the field of ethical behavior. When I grew up in this little town, everybody lived in the same field of ethical behavior, and it wasn't a question, was it legal or illegal? The question, is it right or wrong? And that's the way they lived their lives. We will only be a great country if we continue to do that.
And how can the government, I mean, with the First Amendment, how can the government determine what is possibly be on television or isn't?
See, I don't look at it in terms of how do we go technical, legal, so on. So I look at what we have to do. I would like to go to consensus. We have to do this for our children. We have to do this for the future generations. We can't program our children to be animals. We can't make the heroes people who do violent things. We have the wrong heroes in our country. See, the real heroes in our country, nobody ever heard of. All of our heroes, you know, for example, rock stars are heroes. Athletes are heroes. And some of these athletes are not good role models for our children. Some of these rock stars are people who have these high visibility roles. And you get into a private modesty. Just the basic standards, for example, just, you know, having kids out of wedlock, not being married, not being responsible for the child, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is a terrible message to send to young people. I think right now everybody would choke on the idea of ever saying to young people that the first rule of sex when you're single is abstinence. And yet, to avoid these massive problems from AIDS to illegitimate children, you've got to go back to square one, and really all of our religions teach us that that you should have a strong family unit is step one, to have a child, and then both parents have an equal obligation to be there and rear that child and make sure that child is a good citizen. The government can't do that for you.
Just got a couple minutes left. In the 2 years you've been involved in the public, have you changed the way you deal with the media and the public at all? What have you learned?
Well, the main thing I've learned is the goodness of American people and the how it works. The potential for the greatest years in our country's history can be in the future because the American people still are devoted to this country, are still patriots, still want to do the right thing, but feel like straws in the wind are being swept around by a lot of these factors we discussed today.
Excuse the inside the Beltway question, but I was getting at how people inside the Beltway analyze this together. Have you changed the way you interact at all with the media? Did you learn anything from that experience that you had in that thing? Would you do something differently in the future, specific things? You mentioned earlier.
Well, very simply, we make sure we have a debate on the issues. We make sure that each person in the debate had an opportunity to speak what he had to say on the issues, and that neither person would interrupt the other person in midstream, and that the only thing we could talk about would be the issues. That would be just that so basic and so simple. But that would have to be said in terms of what you learned from that one experience. That's what I learned from that experience. He said, well, gee, you should have known that going in. Well, I guess was not even assuming that that's the way it would be.
Would you debate the vice president again on the issue?
Sure. I'd be glad to debate anybody any time.
How about your relationship with the print media? Do you do much one-on-one interviews on it?
If there's some issue somebody wants to talk about.
How about the overall experience of using television? The books have been written about your use of television to be a candidate. Can anybody else do what you've done?
I would guess anybody could. Nothing special about it. It's not as though we have any professional motion or anything. But I would think anybody could do it.
Are there any shows that you appeared on in the past that won't have you on in the future? Like you'd like to meet the press?
Would the board have me on it?
Would you go back to meet the press if you're invited?
Well, again, I would have one of, that's just say, for what? What is the issue? What are we going to talk about? So on and so forth.
That's a general discussion. You went back like you did the last time.
Well, I went and everybody on the program knew that I came for one reason. That was to raise money for flood victims on Mississippi River, and I knew that they were going to ask me questions on other subjects. But they understood that that's why I ran. That was my motivation for running. That was when we were, our organization was hard at work trying to raise money for flood victims. I called up and said, is there anything that you all would like to discuss that is very detailed that I should bring up a lot of detail with? And they said no. And then when I got there, those were the issues that would require, at least for me. No, if they had said, well, we want to discuss this, this, and this, but please don't bring anything we just had in your head, well, I can always get that in my head. But I was trying to make sure that whatever they want to talk about, I would be ready to talk about. And they said, no, there's nothing wrong with stress and detail. Fine, get there, that's what we've done. That's fine. That's another one. But the reason I asked that question is that one fine time, they raised a very detailed question based on a stack of paper they had just gotten from the Office of Management Budget. And I had no idea what the premises were, what the assumptions were, and the person asking the questions would know what the premises and the assumptions were. I later found out that the premises and the assumptions were wrong. When we finally got to look at and paid to the problem. But we couldn't have intelligent conversation, so I don't want to avoid that. But in the real world, this is the way the process works. So we said, well, that's the way it works.
Thanks for joining us on our bus here in your hometown.
Great. Nice to see you. Good.